Welcome to Make Ready with the Experts, your go-to podcast from Make Ready TV. I'm your host, Fernando Coelho. Sit back and enjoy as we delve into the gun world and talk with experts in their given fields of expertise. I'm Fernando Coelho, and this is Make Ready with the Experts podcast. In this episode, I am sitting here with Rick Hogg from Warhog Tactical, and we're going to be talking about stuff that's important to Rick, important to you, and important to us. So this is stuff you need to hear about. Rick, thanks for coming on board and being here today.
Thanks for having me, Fernando.
I know we've done a few of these with you already. Mm-hmm. It's always fun. We should have, the only thing we're doing wrong is we don't have bourbon right now. It is a little early this morning, although it is afternoon someplace.
Yeah.
You know, and we should be having cigars. My bad. We'll definitely do that later.
Okay.
But I want the audience to know about what you're working on. You have different projects, mm-hmm. and I think the first one, the Duco project.
Yep.
Let's assume that no one knows what that is, and just give me a rundown of what it is, why, and so forth.
Sure. So really, the In Honor of Duco project, I'll give you the main mission, then we'll kind of hit everything else. So the main mission is to never let another SOF canine handler make a medical decision about their partner based on their finances. So reason this all came about, in, I think it was November 2020, my retired work dog, Duco, he was diagnosed with osteosarcoma. The problem is when you get diagnosed, the first thing the vets tell you is, hey, that's going to cost you $10,000. Now, I was fortunate enough to have help there, but what I didn't want, and I didn't realize this till after I lost Duke, July 5th, 2021, was, man, what if a guy who has a U.S. service member, right? I'm alive today because of Duco. What if a guy doesn't have that financial ability? What if he's hard-pressed to go, I'm going to take the $150 option over spending $10,000? So I wanted to make sure that no other SOF canine handler had to make that medical decision based on finances. People remember Conan. So he was the one that was by Trump on the Baghdadi raid. Conan was actually one of our recipients. So he ended up, same thing. These dogs, for whatever reason, get plagued with cancer. His handler gave me a call. And again, you hear it in their voice, right? As soon as it happens, hey, man, kind of that crackly, hey, here's the very guy that saved my life. And there's nothing I can do because potentially I don't have the funds for it. That's where we step in. What happened was shortly after I lost Duke, I don't remember how we partnered with Scott's Wish. So Scott's Wish is the actual 501c3 nonprofit. They are, and I say we, because I'm part of that as well. We are an all volunteer. I say that again, all volunteer. None of us get any type of money, no kickbacks, nothing. The money we bring in goes right back to these dogs. And you can go to scottswish.org/inhonorofduco. You can donate there. There's also a list of kind of the dogs we've helped along the way. So trying to maximize our effort. It was nice because Tony La Russa actually kind of brought us on his board, brought us on board as well to kind of help out with our fundraising efforts. Tony's a super supporter and, you know, looking to expand how many more SOF canines we can help. But there is no doggy VA. There is no doggy care. These guys, here's the part that kills me, Fernando, right? They are U.S. service members that God knows how many guys are alive today. I am just one of many. How many guys are alive today because of these dogs? And when it's time for them to retire, here's the leash. Have a nice life. No Medicare, no nothing. And now it's on you as the handler. So what happens, you know, when you sit there and go, hey, your dog's diagnosed? For us, you know, we had to do a right rear leg amputation, 4 rounds of chemotherapy. It bought me 7 more months. So it's emotional, it's raw, but with all that being said, how can we give back, you know, to very people that are in that same situation? So we don't want those handlers ever to have to make that medical decision. So that's the In Honor of Duco project. Subsets of that, obviously, when you really look at it, I was kind of selfish, I'm not going to lie. Mission statement number one is to never let Dugo's name pass. So again, they say you die twice. Once when you physically die, second when your name said for the last time. So again, it's keeping his memory alive is our primary mission statement. Obviously, number two, never let another SOF K9 handler make a medical decision about their partner based on their finances. And then three is looking at where else we can support. We've helped out police officers as well. We had a Louisiana state trooper. His dog was in need. We helped him out. We vested up two police canine officers with ballistic vests. We help out Military Working Dog Team Support Association, who again supports deployed dogs all around the world with care packages and stuff like that. So it's not just the SOF canine that we're focusing on. Yes, that's our primary focus, but we have other reaches as well supporting those working dogs out there, because at the end of the day, there's just nothing out there, especially for the military working dogs. There is zero coming from the U.S. government.
I agree. When you and I first started the War Dog story, mm-hmm. the documentary that we've been working on, that is now going into post-production very soon. We've done, 40 interviews, mm-hmm. Gone to Joint Base Lackland, gone to Bragg, and the common theme, and it's sad, borderline pathetic, to be quite honest, that we went from World War II, dogs are going in, they're being donated by the civilians. Mm-hmm. So little Timmy has his dog, the dog, happened to be a German Shepherd. Okay, well, that dog is now going off to war. And he's going to be trained by the U.S. military. He's going to be, the European theater, they didn't work out so well, but they used him in the Pacific theater. Mm-hmm. So Dobermans and Shepherds were going off to the Pacific theater. Not exactly a hospitable, simple environment for them. And it was pretty bad for the soldiers. So imagine now for these dogs, mm-hmm. right? And then when the war was over, these dogs were celebrated. They had discharge papers mm-hmm. and came home back to their families. So, okay, that made sense to me. It made total sense to me. They were treated well. They were taken care of by their handlers. And then their handlers, in some cases, didn't even want to give them back mm-hmm. because they got so attached. And then you go to Korea. Well, now our U.S. military decided that they're not going to just get dogs from people and then give them back. They're going to treat them as a piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. So now they buy the dogs from these civilians, take these dogs to Korea, and now these dogs are being used in various capacities. But then as the Korean War winds down, all the equipment we left back in Korea included the dogs. So now, not for nothing, but every culture is different. Mm-hmm. Here in the United States, it's you can't even think about eating a dog, okay? I can't even think about eating a pigeon, yeah. much as a dog, okay? But in Korea, they still eat dog. Mm-hmm. So I've heard stories from our interviews where during the Korean War at a base, a dog passed away for non-combat issues, reasons. They buried the dog at the base. Next day, the grave was disturbed and the dog was gone.
Yeah.
Well, that's their culture, mm-hmm. right? So, okay. We're done with the Korean conflict. Now we're in Vietnam. Another clusterfuck, if mm-hmm. anything. So now we're training dogs again. Now they're going point, running point. So now you have, and for those watching this don't understand what that means, and you know what it means, but it's the soldier that runs up front, that's going up front in front of the entire group of soldiers, he's got point. Well, with a dog handler, now that dog is on point, and the dog handler is watching the dog for his motions, for his moves, for what he's going to let the handler know. So here we are now in Vietnam. Dogs are saving lives of soldiers left and right. Mm-hmm. You were with me on some of these interviews, and we've interviewed numerous guys that were running point with their dogs, and these dogs were heroes.
Yeah.
You know, heroes. And when the Vietnam War wrapped up, we left them behind again.
Yep.
4,000 some odd dogs. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's a slap in the face. But then again, our government and our people really didn't treat the Vietnam vets that great either when they mm-hmm. came back. So, okay, now we're at GWAT, Global War on Terror.
Well, I'm going to pause you, right? So up until 2000, when they were done their service, we euthanized them.
Yes. Yeah, right? That's right. That's right.
So it wasn't until Congress passed a law, they were no longer going to euthanize military working dogs. So it just didn't run up until Vietnam. Yeah, we left them there. We abandoned them.
Yes.
Right? We abandoned U.S. service members. That's the way I look at it.
Yes.
So, you know, for me, Duke was on the manifest. If we needed a medevac, we'd call a medevac in for him. Mm-hmm. He'd get treated by U.S. surgeons, right? The biggest combat multiplier on the battlefield is that canine. Up until 2000, so we abandoned them both Korea, Vietnam. Up until 2000, when they were done their service, we're euthanizing them. Luckily, Congress passed the law. Then it gave the handler the option to pick it up. So we're not really that far removed when you look at really giving these guys. When I say rights, it's not even really rights because where's their health care, right? They deserve so much more. So, you know, we roll into the GWAT. I'm living proof, right? Numerous times. It'd be one if it's one, right? Numerous times, man. That dog's out in front. He's going in before everybody else. He's saving lives, mm-hmm. right? Duke brought all his mates back home, right?
Right.
People don't understand the importance of the canine. And then for the U.S. government to go, yeah, we're not going to kill him, because that's basically what they're doing when they euthanize him. Hey, here's the leash. Have a good life.
Yeah.
Where's his care, right? How does he go from having medevac priority on the battlefield, like any other U.S. service member, to mm-hmm. getting nothing? Have a good retirement.
Well, one of the stories that that we heard, another former unit member, mm-hmm. He was talking about during deployment. So, and that's the other thing too. It wasn't just now the dog is not just running point or he's a sentry dog. Now there's a new role, the combat assault dog. Mm-hmm. So now that dog is essentially a soldier going in first into a house, engaging the enemy mm-hmm. with a camera on his back. You're watching the camera to see what he sees, and then the team goes in. So now he is a member of the team.
Oh yeah,
you know. So as Shannon had said to me, when you went to a hospital, if you were wounded and the dog was wounded, you went to the left. The dog went to the right. The dog was having a surgeon.
Oh yeah,
a U.S. surgeon.
Yep.
Not a vet.
Nope.
Taking care of the dog.
Yep.
So that says something. Mm-hmm. That means we've made progress. Mm-hmm. But we didn't make enough progress, like you said, where the dog now retires and you retire. Well, you have VA benefits. Mm-hmm. The dog has nothing.
Yep.
So I agree. That's something that needs to change. Mm-hmm. And dogs that do retire do need to have a level of care. Mm-hmm. And another example of that is not just what I saw from the interviews that I did with the GWAT era and special operations community. But when I went to Joint Base Lackland, mm-hmm. where they actually trained the dogs for all the branches of the military, with the exception of the special operations community, we won't go there. That's a whole other that's a whole other podcast.
Yes.
But now you're at Joint Base Lackland, mm-hmm. hundreds of dogs mm-hmm. being trained. The Marine Corps is there, the Air Force, the Navy, the Army is there. TSA is there, mm-hmm. okay, with their dogs. Well, now you have all these dogs being trained. You have Holland Hospital, one of the best hospitals for canines. You know, I actually saw and interviewed one of their surgeons who runs the facility, and the place is phenomenal, mm-hmm. you know. But you have all these dogs that are now being processed through, being trained, and now you get a grasp of how many dogs there are going out to all the branches, mm-hmm. and they're all going to retire, and they're all going to get nothing.
On average, I think it's between 200 and 300 dogs every year retire out of the military. Now, again, it's on the handler if he wants to opt to take that dog.
Right.
If not, they've got the military working dog adoption center down there at Lackland
yes.
where you can apply and get that. It's funny because you mentioned that. One of the guys we helped out, so SSD Johnny, so Specialized Search Dog, who supported Special Operations Forces over in Afghanistan, in Johnny's case, his handler was still active duty. And here it is, he's got this dog, right? So active duty guy, I'll mm-hmm. tell you straight up, Uncle Sugar don't pay you the best of money. And you know, his vet, he's got some issues going on with Johnny. He takes him to the vet. It's like, yeah, I can't help you. It's going to require a higher level of care. Well, it's going to cost more money. There's no way we're going to let that handler sit there and pay those bills. Why? Because he can't.
Right.
He's got to make decisions. Do I feed my family? Do I sell the house? Do I do whatever? No way. And I talked to him. I said, hey, dude, we got you covered. Let's go figure out what's going on with Johnny. We got him all patched up. Good to go. Right? But that... So this thing is all-encompassing, right? So most people think when that dog retires, yes, when me and Duke retired, we retired together. Mm-hmm. It just, that was our timing. But there's guys who are still active with retired dogs. Zero benefits, right?
Yeah,
so now you can ask this active duty guy, hey, you feeding the baby or you taking care of the dog?
Right.
And then who knows what that bill's, I mean, who's got 10K sitting in their pockets just to pitch out?
Yeah, so, yeah. It's not right. It's not right. I'm really happy with what you're doing. And we definitely need to let people know where they can donate so that way they can support the cause. Now, speaking of supporting and helping those out, let me shift a little bit to the law enforcement community.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I both know law enforcement officers are put in threats all the time, real world scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
They're put in situations where me as a civilian will take a carbine class and a pistol class, and I'm going to be doing all kinds of stuff. I'm not going to be doing a Honda roll, but we're going to be doing all kinds of silly stuff on the range.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, we're civilians. The chances of us needing to have or you actually utilize that skill are far less than, say, a police officer. Police officers today, compared to even just 10 years ago, are now being called on more than ever. They're having to save lives and defend people without support. A lot of times police officers are going out there and they're by themselves. They don't have a partner, you know, or their backup is 15, 20 minutes away. So their skills are what's going to get them through the situation. So we both know law enforcement training is substandard.
Mm-hmm.
It's minimal. And then, of course, most agencies will only do recalls like every 6 months. So that's the only time you'll be shooting your gun again.
Or a year.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And they don't exactly say, okay, look, you want to take a class? Yeah, we'll give you the money for that class. We'll give you the ammo and we'll let you take the time off. No, they won't do that either.
Yeah.
So how do law enforcement officers get the superior training that they need that they can't get from an agency? Well, the agency ain't going to do it. Even if they wanted to, they don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you step in.
Mm-hmm.
So now tell me what you're doing.
Yeah, so Project Officer Survival, our mission is to provide free law enforcement firearms training via corporate tax, you know, deductible donations or if anyone wants to donate. And primarily we got two 501c3s we deal with. So the first one is the Protectors Foundation, so protectorsfoundation.org, and then Spike's Canine Fund. And we just, it's funny because we just wrapped up a Spice course. The thing with Spikes is Spikes focuses towards the canine officer. So Spike's Canine Fund, again, in honor of Duco, we hit on him earlier. Spike was Jimmy Hatch's canine, who he lost overseas. It's funny how these special operations guys want to give back. But really, we just wrapped up a course there, one-handed shooting for the canine officer, that was hosted by Spikes. And then our regular Project Officer Survival courses, we've been running those since 2020. The problem is at the end of the day, I still have to feed my family. And we were sitting there, we were running for free. Rick was sporting the bill. But at the end of the day, when you're traveling all over, you wind up basically running in the red. So we partnered with Jason Piccolo with the Protectors Foundation. So again, we've got another avenue that people can donate. Ideally, what we're trying to do is get corporations, right? Everyone's trying to figure out how to beat this U.S. government tax code. Well, if you make a tax deductible donation to the Protectors Foundation, there's all kinds of things we can do on top of training our law enforcement officers. And we've seen it before where, hey, your company comes out. If you want to make it, you know, a media marketing event, we can do that. You want to bring your sales teams out there, you know, hit other municipalities, come out. Hey, look at your greatest and great, you know, latest and greatest products. Oh, by the way, if you're donating equipment to them, again, it's all tax write-offs because we've got the Protectors Foundation 501c3 that can facilitate all that. The biggest thing that struggles that I'm having, it's all fundraising. right? So the Ann Arbor Duco project is a little easier because where I've got Scott's Wish and then I've got Tony La Russa, they're already established names. Now it's trying to get, you know, and Spikes is established as well. But again, Spikes is for the canine officer. How do I reach everybody? So let's say I've got a municipality. They go, hey, man, you know, we want to get something for our SWAT team. Great. We got to have dollars in the bank. So trying to get the Protectors Foundation, which is a relatively new 501c3, get cash in the bank. That's why we're trying to reach out to corporations. Figure out whatever your corporate tax strategy is. Make a tax-deductible donation. If you just want to be silent, we're fine with that. You want to make some type of marketing event, we're good with that. All officers agree to be videoed and photographed, and they know, hey, they're going to be out there. Why wouldn't you if you're sitting there giving back? And then we've got some great companies, you know, so whether it's Grizzly, Oakley, First Form, ICC Ammo is really our latest one. And ICC is stepping up because, again, we're going to do a course all on steel. They're providing all their frangible ammo. Mm-hmm. I mean, they want to get on board and support these guys as well. And that's all we're trying to do. I don't care what company you are. We can figure out a way to make it, if you want, beneficial for you, but really for that officer, to make sure that he is more efficient, more effective with his firearm. God forbid he's ever in that deadly force encounter. Because these guys are undertrained. And you talked about not getting time, not getting paid, not getting this, right? Why is it so hard for these guys to get training? And then you have to usually run it up the chain. Hey, mother, may I? The beauty is, you know, with the upcoming course, ICC is providing the ammo. So they don't even have to go and ask for any bullets. Mm-hmm. Now, is that going to be a constant? Probably not, right? But again, as much as we can do to negate the cost of that officer, and then to boot with the firearms training notebook, so this is a kind of a key change from the Warhawk tactical side, and then my co-author, Mark Kelly from Kelly Defense, we came up with the firearms training notebook. This is a tangible way that guys can get data. Because especially for like my canine officers, they'll have all kinds of training logs for the dog. It's like, where's yours? You ask your average officer, draw to first shot, IPSC style target, A zone hit, what's your time? I don't know. I know I qualled.
Right.
Great, you qualled on some janky target, right?
Yeah.
We want to change that. I want to empower these law enforcement officers, at least when they come to my range. I'm not going to baby them. I'm not going to coddle them. I want to empower them, because the problem is what I see is when you go to a law enforcement range, they keep them in this little box. I'm going to sit there and let you think for yourself. Hey, man, if you're out of ammo and the line's still going, you want to dry fire? Go dry fire, right? Mm-hmm. You can take your pistol out of the holster. You can work your action, make yourself better. Oh, by the way, at the firearms training notebook, you're pulling data. So now when you're done the course, I can figure out what my dry fire plan is, what my live fire plan is, and actually make myself better to increase my survivability. These guys are in a job that will kill them. And there is zero support from what I see as a generality, not across the board, as a generality for them to get increased training. And all we want to do is make them more efficient, more effective with their firearm. I hope they never have to pull it out, right? Mm-hmm. But God forbid they do. You know, they're effective. What we know right now, just from the feedback we've got, where a little over 300 students or law enforcement, let me rephrase, a little over 300 law enforcement officers trained. Right now, we've had at least three officers going, hey, man, directly correlate the training they received and their survivability. And it was, in all three cases, I think within a 2 or 3 week span of them finishing the course, that they were in that deadly force encounter. Wow. So
basically, in a nutshell, a manufacturer, a marketing company, whoever, whatever the business is, they could mm-hmm. make, they could be making cola, they could be making optics, they could be doing yep. whatever. For the what they normally would spend on a print ad in a magazine, one mm-hmm. print ad, they can probably train from that cost 20, 30, 40 police officers and get a tax write-off.
100%. The number usually comes in is number of days that the department can afford mm-hmm. and typically what the range will support. So what I've typically seen, 8 to 16 is about your average law enforcement range size. Mm-hmm. I've seen as big as 25, right? We'll accommodate whatever they've got. But really what we need to make this happen is the backing of those corporations, regardless what they are. Hey, you want to call the local news company? Hey, man, Company X is supporting our local law enforcement agency. Boom. I don't care. I'll sit there and do an interview. I'll talk. Mm-hmm. And then people are always like, you know, I'm all about accountability. How are we doing what we're doing? So really at warhog.com/Project Officer Survival, you can see every time there's a class, boom, we're putting that picture up. Here's the guys you're training. You know, those companies that are supporting us, hey, we put it in there. So we want to give back just as much to the law enforcement officers, but to those companies as well that are supporting. Because at the end of the day, these guys are getting the bare bones basic. How can we increase their survivability? How can we make them better? How can we teach them do that dry fire training? So it just training just doesn't happen on the range. Mm-hmm. And if we can get that mindset going, man, how much better would these guys' survivability be?
So now we just need to get the word out to all these companies, mm-hmm. especially in the gun industry where you and I are from. There's a lot of gun companies out there.
Yep.
And this isn't about what gun the students are running. It ain't about the ammo that they're running. It ain't about any of their kit at all. It's mm-hmm. about giving back to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. It's about taking some of those ad dollars.
Sure.
And instead of shifting them to social media or print or television, mm-hmm. maybe not do that silly hunting show mm-hmm. and take that money and divert it to helping law enforcement officers.
Sure.
Or instead of running that extra ad in a magazine for $4,000 or $5,000 or full page ad, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, mm-hmm. they could take that money, mm-hmm. donate it, use that for training, get attention from those police officers. Now these police officers know mm-hmm. that that company helps support that class.
Yep.
And they got a tax write off. I mean, I don't see anything wrong.
But here's the other part, Fernando, right? If they wanted to make it a marketing event.
Right.
By all means. You know, hey, you've got something, widget, gidget, if it fits, you know, kind of what we're doing, yeah, why not? You know, clothing's a prime example. Hey, man, I can get people sizes, outfit them up there, good to go. Firearms, maybe, maybe not, right? I mean, there's ways to skin the cat.
Yeah.
100%. You're seeing red dot pistols starting to influx into law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Biggest thing I see is guys aren't making wise decisions on what they're doing. Imagine doing an introductory to law enforcement red dot pistol under Project Officer Survival, because we're still getting firearms training in there. You're getting education on that red dot. And then I think that could be a place where, hey, if you get, you know, between, you know, optics manufacturer, which everyone knows we're aligned with Aimpoint, mm-hmm. Aimpoint Acro and closed red dot.
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to get a piece of kit,
yeah,
bet your life on it.
Yep.
You know, I'm running the Walther PDP. You know, if Walther want to come on board, Safariland holster, you know, boom, here's a package. You give it to the guys. It gives them a chance to try these products while getting some training. So now down the road, they can make a better educated decision, especially when it comes to these red dots. Because we did a red dot instructor development course before lunch. Two of the guys running the same type of optics that their advice was from the gun shop, their optics were broke.
Ooh.
Right? So we're full encompassing, right? So yes, primarily we focus on the handgun because I know every single officer has a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
Hey man, if you want to do patrol rifle stuff, if you want to do room clearing stuff, if you're a SWAT team, canine, whatever the case may be, we can incorporate it. Key part being, we need dollars to back it. And we can travel. The beauty is, have gun box, we'll travel, right? You want to go out to California? Sure. I can go out there. I can go wherever a company so desires. They don't have to come to me. You know, so we've got that ability to keep the officers right there in place. Come to your, you know, corporate headquarters area, whatever you want to say, and boom, we're out training.
So. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, our goal is to get the word out about this, mm-hmm. and we need to keep talking to people. We need to keep talking to the gun industry, outside of the gun industry. And for those watching this, spread the word. Let folks know there's a way to help law enforcement officers get free training. We just described it. Anyone can help make this happen. Donations can be as little as a couple of $100 to a couple of $100,000, because there are so many police officers out there that need this training that Rick could be out there all year going every month, going out to different states, and he's still not going to be able to hit everybody. So mm-hmm. we need to get this money in. Rick needs this in so that we can get this training for law enforcement officers. And I think that's critical. Yeah. And I appreciate you being able to be here to talk about yeah. it.
Well, I want to add one more point for an end, right?
Sure.
So yeah, we're looking for the corporate donations. You know, however, here's the other point. Parents, let's think about it. And again, I'm not using the kid scare tactic, but I'd want those officers that are protecting my children. God forbid an active shooter happens at that school.
Right.
Hey, you know, if you've got parents that want to sit there and collect funds, you know, contact me. We can work it out. Hey, we can do a specific active shooter for your department.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I like that.
Just that's my whole thing, right? I don't want to say, hey, we only do corporate. I will do whatever. I just want to make sure these guys out there have the best training. They're protecting themselves, the citizens, students, whatever the case may be. Let's just make sure the world's a little bit safer by having properly trained officers out there.
I like that. I like that. Well, Rick, thank you for coming out.
Thanks, Randall.
We're going to be, after this, we're going out to the range.
Oh, yeah.
And this is going to be fun. Thank you, everyone, for watching. And we'll be back for another episode soon. Be sure to visit MakeReady.tv and subscribe today. You'll have access to all our exclusive videos streaming to you on any device, anywhere, anytime.